It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, owning a house can be a way to build wealth and feel secure in retirement, but homeownership for African Americans continues to decline nationwide. We'll hear from two Wisconsinites working to change that. First, Judith Sears Poisson joins us now because this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Spring Membership Drive. Your support is a big deal because it powers the programs that keep you in the know and entertained.
That's how WPR works. The people who use it are the largest source of funding for it. You've been meaning to give, so do it now. This is the last day of this drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And this hour, we have a goal of 25 gifts. These hourly goals are a big deal. They help us stay on track financially so we can keep the discussions going strong on the Ideas Network. Give now on this last day of the membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You may think that Wisconsin Public Radio operates largely with tax dollars. We do get funding from the federal government and from the state. And it really is voluntary listener contributions that make up the largest source of funding for WPR programs.
That means your support is vital to keeping Wisconsin Public Radio on the air. Now that you know how important you are, make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you know, the beauty of making a voluntary donation is that you decide how much to give. WPR is listener supported, and that means the more donors we have, the more secure our funding is. So how much you give isn't nearly as important as the fact that you do give.
A lot of first-time donors will give a one-time donation of $100. Some people go for $10 a month. But you decide the amount that's right for you. Since giving is your choice and because WPR is something you value, you'll find out that donating feels really good. Find out right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your support is important for so many reasons. And one of them is that it helps pay for equipment upgrades. That means that you and your fellow listeners get a clear signal, statewide news coverage, a useful website at WPR.org, and a whole lot more.
Your support helps WPR stay current so that you get the programs you depend on without fail, as well as those extra things like our mobile app. Is that an extra thing? I don't know. If that's how you listen to us, that's a really basic, important thing that I'm really glad we can do, and we can do it. Thanks to listeners like you who help pay us. Help pay for us doing that. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We know you value your time, and we value your time, too. So giving to Wisconsin Public Radio really takes just a few minutes. You just need to tell us your name, contact information, how much you'd like to give, and how you'd like to pay for it.
It is quick. It's super easy to do, and your gift right now really does help. Take the next few minutes to support Central Time and the station you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 25 pledges this hour. This is, again, the last day of the spring membership drive. You make WPR possible when you give. And you can do that right now at WPR.org or by giving us a call at 888-202-2552.
Last day of the drive, which means it's the last chance to get in on the drawing for one of five $500 grocery store gift cards. You are automatically entered when you give any amount right now. If you're sustainer, you're already entered. Thank you so much for being a sustaining member. But if not, get in the game, make your pledge, support great radio, and have a shot at that $500 grocery store gift card with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're not a sustainer yet, this is a great time to think about becoming one. It's easy to set up the convenient ongoing monthly donations from a bank account or a credit card. You can set that all up at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and you will know that month in, month out, you are providing reliable support for the programs you love.
We also have a new t-shirt design for this drive. You can get that your own t-shirt, a WPR t-shirt, with a gift of $10 a month or more at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
I am super excited about this t-shirt. It's kind of a funky, I'd say almost retro color. It's a heather maroon with a cool salmon design on it, and it shows various places you might be listening to WPR, at home, out in the great outdoors, in a rural setting. It's a great t-shirt. Show your love for WPR by making your gift, and if it's $10 a month or more, pick pick up that t-shirt. You can do it all at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
What it really comes down to is this. You count on the Ideas Network for great conversations each and every day, and we count on you to help pay for it. You can make your gift in support of your radio listening, your entertainment, your inspiration, the information we bring you here on the Ideas Network. Do it right now. WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thank you. Now, owning a home has long been a big piece of the American dream, but not all Americans have had the same access to try to make that a reality. The home ownership gap between Black and white Milwaukeeans is 40%, according to ACTS Housing. The national numbers don't look much better. According to a report from the Joint Center for Housing Studies at Harvard, 43% of African Americans owned homes in 2017, compared to 72% of white Americans, and that gap seems to be widening over the years. Joining us now are two Milwaukeeans working to make home ownership possible for many diverse families in the city. Michael Gosman is the executive director of ACTS Housing in Milwaukee, an organization that seeks to empower people through home ownership. Michael, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Jomar Hooper is the Wisconsin market leader for Common Bond Communities, an organization that aims to build stable homes, strong futures, and vibrant communities. Jomar, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Michael, let's start with you. A lot of issues behind this gap in home ownership. Can you talk about a little bit of the history that led to this big, substantial gap in home ownership between white and Black Americans?
Yeah, well, when you see the numbers, they're really jarring. When the Urban Institute came out with their study in 2018 that showed the 40% gap between Black and white home ownership in Milwaukee, it sort of confirms something that we might have seen or thought anecdotally, but it certainly hits hard. And the reasons for that are numerous, right? It's everything from really the laws of our government going back hundreds of years and until more recent times that made it more challenging for African Americans to access home ownership, racially restrictive covenants, redlining, and then a lot of person to person racism that exists in our community and has existed for a long time. And then you throw on top of that the foreclosure crisis of 2008 that disproportionately affected families living in our city who are mostly majority African American in the neighborhoods that were hardest hit. And you have a really toxic and sad situation that we're working hard to rectify.
Let's get into some of the impacts of this. Jomar, I know your organization works on housing stability, and that could be home ownership. It could be longer-term renting. But what does it mean? What's the difference between having stable housing, especially when you're bringing up kids, versus that uncertainty and that constant need sometimes to move around?
Well, it makes a lot of difference for our families. Just that,
Jomar, I'm sorry, we've got a bad connection. We just lost you on the line. We'll try to reconnect. So, Michael, let me throw a different question to you. What does this gap in home ownership mean in terms of financial security over time?
Well, it's just huge. I mean, the number one reason that families come to us wanting to access home ownership is that the cost to own is significantly less than the cost to rent. And so through our program, a typical family comes to us as spending $600-$800 a month, sometimes more, to rent. They can often save $200 or more to own when they own. And so home ownership for many families offers significant savings over rent, but it also presents the opportunity to accumulate wealth. And it's really staggering when you look at the wealth accumulation of African-American families versus white families. For many middle-class families and lower-income families, home ownership is really one of the few ways that they may have access to gaining wealth, and the disparity is significant in part because so few Black families, such a low percentage, have been able to achieve home ownership as compared to whites.
And I understand over time, Michael, there was some improvement in African-American home ownership rates after the 1960s. A lot of that got hurt with financial downturns in 2001 and especially with the Great Recession. What did we see happen?
Yeah, well, the great impact in Milwaukee and really around the country was that home values, especially in neighborhoods that might have lower property values to begin with, Really got inflated in the run up to the foreclosure crisis. So 2005, 2006, 2007, there were homes that were selling, in neighborhoods of Milwaukee for $100,000, $125,000. And then you fast forward, two, 3 years after the bubble burst, all of a sudden maybe those homes are worth $65,000 or $70,000. And so you have families who, even if they were able to hold on to their jobs, they're now so upside down in their mortgage that they're questioning, do I stay in this house or do I not? And so it really decimated a lot of the people who'd been doing all the things they were told to do. They were told that home ownership was a pathway to the American dream, but then when property values dropped the way they did, they weren't left with any good options.
Joe, I think we've got Jomar back. Jomar, let's throw that question at you again, hopefully with a better connection now. Stability, what is the impact of having a stable housing, whether that's home ownership or a stable renting situation?
Well, from common bounds perspective, what we see is that's the initial first step to getting folks to where they need to be in life. So having that housing stability, that place to call their own, allows them to kind of set the stage for their life to kind of make the next step that they need to kind of advance past that, whether it's ensuring their kids are in a good school district, getting a great education, whether they're able to move forward in jobs through promotions or through job changes or do additional education for themselves. So I think just that foundation and that stability is the base of life, so that they can advance themselves afterwards, whether that be in stable rental housing or preferably also in stable homeownership.
We're talking with Michael Gossman, Executive Director of ACTS Housing in Milwaukee, and Jomar Hooper, Wisconsin Market Leader for Common Bond Communities, looking at a big gap between white and black Americans when it comes to home ownership. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you see in your own community? If you're a person of color yourself, were you able to buy a home? What were some of the obstacles you face when it comes to home ownership? How important is this for your family, for your community? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Coming up, we'll take a look at what both of our guest organizations are doing in Milwaukee to try to tackle at least some pieces of this problem. That's coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about historically low home ownership rates for African Americans nationwide and what that looks like here in Wisconsin and in Milwaukee in particular. Jomar Hooper is Wisconsin Market Leader for Common Bond Communities. Michael Gossman, Executive Director of ACTS Housing in Milwaukee. I want to ask both of you about some of your efforts in the Milwaukee community to tackle some of these problems. Jomar, let's start with you. What are you at Common Bond doing in Milwaukee to help create more stable housing?
So traditionally, we are a multifamily rental organization. So but we've been trying to make steps and strides that once we have stability for our renters and solid quality affordable housing, we want to see how we can help them take the next step to get into their own home if they're ready and willing at the time. So we're fortunate to have some great organizations like ACTS Housing and other housing counseling agencies throughout the city that we're hoping to partner with in the future to be able to identify our residents who are ready to make that next step. We have a captive audience, and we have a service model that will allow us to make those connections to get folks in there, have the conversations with them for those who are ready that can take the next step, or to hopefully build a pipeline and a path for those who hopefully can make that step in the future. We've already done a program similar to this in the Twin Cities with the Minnesota Housing Finance and several other local nonprofits, and we hope to replicate that success that we've had from that housing program with our partners in the Milwaukee area as well, too.
And Michael, can you talk about what you're doing at ACTS, in some cases helping connect people with houses that they can afford and helping them along through the process, but it looks like having them, the home buyer themselves, really be in the driver's seat.
Yeah, we think that's super important. So the families that come to us, and we have a weekly orientation at ACTS. This year we expect we'll have at least 1,000 individuals who will reach out to us, sick of renting, interested in thinking about home ownership, and we offer them a pathway. It's not an easy path. It requires a lot of hard work on their part, but then we're their guide throughout that process. So we'll work with them, counsel them to prepare them for home ownership, help them fix up their finances and work out an action plan. Once they can qualify for financing, we are a real estate brokerage, so we'll represent them in the market to get them the best deal for them and their family. And then we've got two extra services that are quite unique. We coach families through the rehab of distressed homes, and so that's really a specialty of ours. And I'd say to your listeners, if you're out there, you're renting, especially someone who has skills, someone who has vision, someone who doesn't mind putting in some hard work to save money in terms of the purchase price, we help families fix up homes that are distressed, often getting them really good deals. And then for those families that are doing the rehab, we have our own loan products. We'll lend money to families to support them in their efforts. So you said it correctly, the families in the driver's seat. We're so amazed at the strength of families that continually reach out to us. This year, we think we'll help in excess of 170 families who become new homeowners, and it's because of their strength, and often they just need a little bit of help to navigate the process.
Let's bring on a caller now. Fred is with us in Erin. Fred, hello.
Hello. How are you this afternoon?
Good. What did you want to tell us about, Fred?
Well, I was an educator in the Milwaukee public school system for about 35 years, and starting in the mid-70s through about 2005. And for that first decade, you did not see a great deal of transient student population because things were all pretty stable, and that had a lot to do with the economy. But when parents either lost job because of manufacturers moving out or whatever the case may be, and many of those families were renting, and maybe they got evicted because lack of job or whatever, and then by the time that student got pulled out of a classroom, which might take a week or two, and then by the time they get settled in, there's another week or two of transition into the new school, it wouldn't be uncommon to see as many as a third of a classroom trickle in as new students.
Fred, thanks a lot for the call. I want to jump in. And we've been hearing about current reporting backing up what Fred's is talking about with Erin Richards of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Joe Mark, can you talk about that if people, again, are having to move around, how that can be disruptive, as Fred is saying, to a kid's education?
Yeah, as a Milwaukee graduate, MPS graduate, I've seen it kind of firsthand through my time there and through my experiences working with the district, that it's an epidemic currently right now. We've seen issues where kids can lose up to 1 year of academic progress based upon moves that they've had during the school year. So that not only affects the child and them having to catch up once they move to a new school district, plus the issues with busing, it also affects the school culture and climate as well, too, which potentially has some effects upon what we're seeing with our results from Milwaukee Public Schools and other school districts in the region. So it's kind of a trickle-down effect when it comes to the transient nature of a lot of our families.
Fred, thanks for the call. Michael, in our last minute or so, can you talk about home ownership and housing stability and the positive impact that can have on a neighborhood, on a community?
So the families that reach out to us, you know, their first ambition is usually, you know, they want to be stable, they want to create a good environment for their kids, and that's where it starts. You know, just save a little bit of money, get into a decent house. But it goes so far beyond that, right? Because you know, once they have a place that they can live, that they can afford, with the savings that they've achieved, maybe they can have some better food on the table. They're way more likely to take care of the yard than an absentee investor owner might. So it creates this positive energy on the block. Their kids are much more likely to be successful in school. The health outcomes are better. So there's just all this data that supports if you can get a family into stable housing, and even better, get them into an ownership situation where they're really stable and they're accumulating equity, it just has a huge impact on the family, not just financially, but really emotionally, and extending beyond that to the neighborhood. And that's what we're trying to do, you know, through helping families one by one, really help them create the stronger neighborhoods that all of our cities really want.
Michael, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Jomar, thanks a lot for being with us.
Thank you very much.
We have been talking about home ownership rates among white Americans and African Americans, a big gap between the two. Jomar Hooper was with us, Wisconsin market leader for Common Bond Communities, and Michael Gossman, executive director of ACT Housing in Milwaukee. Coming up after the news, a look at the Foxconn plant in southeastern Wisconsin and some skepticism about how big it's actually going to be. First, Judith Sears-Poisson is in the studio with me for our spring membership drive here at WPR. Your chance is the last day, your last chance to support us during this drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have about 35 minutes left this hour. We're looking for 17 more people to join in. Thank you so much if you've already given.
And if you haven't, do it now. Get in there with your pledge. Get entered into, by the way, a drawing for one of five $500 gift cards to a local grocery store with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. We heard from Rose in Mount Horeb. Rose says, my gift is small but sincere. I love Central Time. Thank you. Rose, thank you so much. I'm glad you love the show. Thank you so much for giving. Rose says it's small but sincere, and that is fantastic. We don't ask any one person to do it all, to pay for it all. We just ask that you put in, if you can afford something, put in what you can afford. And what are we at? 54,000 or so people pool their resources. They do it together. And that adds up to the biggest source of our funding here at WPR. Thank you, Rose. Thank you to everyone who's given. WPR.org if you have it, though, or call 888-202-2552.
In that last segment, we looked at national data on Black home ownership, and we brought it back to Wisconsin with a housing expert in Milwaukee. You know, we have conversations every day on Central Time that take a national issue and present it through a lens of life in Wisconsin.
And we can only do it thanks to you. We're listener supported, and that means your donation makes it all possible, these conversations we have every day. Give now, pick an amount that works for you, and then make your gift at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
Whether you're already a member or maybe you're making your first gift ever, anyone can become a sustainer. Let us know what monthly amount works for you and whether you want that to come from your bank account or credit card.
It's that easy, and once you set it up, it automatically renews as long as you want it to. Start your sustaining membership right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you donate to WPR, you'll join 54,000 fellow members. That's an amazing number of people who want to make sure that programs like Central Time are always available. Your contribution, together with others, makes up the largest source of funding for WPR programs.
And do it right now. Make your very powerful and important gift right now on this, the last day of our spring membership drive. Rebecca from Lancaster says, WPR is my dependable and much appreciated source for laughter, knowledge, and current events. Thank you so much. Rebecca, thank you. How about you? Your turn, if you haven't given yet. Make a gift. Lots of reasons to do it. You support great radio. You can get the new WPR t-shirt when you give $10 a month or more, and you get entered into a drawing for one of five $500 grocery store gift cards. A pile of reasons to give right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Thank you so much for your support. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, just how big will the Foxconn plant in southeastern Wisconsin actually end up being? A number of analysts are saying smaller than we might have thought initially. We'll find out why coming up. First, Judith Sears-Poisson joins me in the studio for our spring membership drive, the last day of our spring membership drive. Your contribution keeps Central Time and the Ideas Network going strong. Whether you give $10 a month or $100 a month, every gift really does make a difference. Donate now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And we have about 25 minutes left this hour to get 13 more people to join in. Your gift right now is so important because when you give, you support the programs you rely on every day.
Thank you so much if you've already given, if you're a sustainer. If not, this is the last day. It's your last chance to give to Central Time, to the Ideas Network during this drive. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You know, when you do the math, in just 1 month, there are hundreds of conversations on the Ideas Network. When you support WPR with a donation, you're essentially making all of those conversations possible. Take that simple, powerful step right now when you give on this last day of our spring membership drive at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Kurt in Wanakee gave a pledge. He says, I listen to WPR and have always meant to donate. Today, driving home, I heard your pledge drive, and the guys said even donating the cost of a cup of coffee or two would help. I thought, I can do that. Well, now, how about you? Think about the cost of a cup of coffee or a daily treat or whatever. a buck or two a day. It's easy to spend that kind of money on something that's part of your daily routine.
And Wisconsin Public Radio is probably part of your daily routine as well. I'm actually thinking one of the better parts of your daily routine. It's your daily news source, your conversation starter, your place to learn. So spend some money on it today and every day. Start with maybe a dollar a day. That's $30 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The 2019 WPR t-shirt has a salmon-colored design on a maroon background. It shows you that WPR is everywhere you are, in town, at home, and in the great outdoors. How do you feel when you wear a WPR t-shirt?
I feel like I'm on top of the world. It's a way for me to meet people. People come up and talk to me.
I feel proud. That represents something that I believe in, and it gives a little more pep in your step.
I feel proud, connected, part of a bigger community.
Find out how great it feels to show off your WPR pride. Ask for a t-shirt now when you pledge $10 a month or make a one-time gift of $120. Here's how.
You can make that gift right now at WPR.org. It takes just a few minutes online or a brief phone call at 888-202-2552. It's Central Time. Rob Ferret here with Judith Sears-Poisson, reminding you that listener support is the biggest source of funding for Central Time and all the programs you listen to. That's why we ask you to help pay for them. Make your gift right now, $10 a month, $100 a month, whatever amount you choose. That is exactly the right amount to give.
And your gift right now says, you know, I really like this program. I want more of it. It makes me think. It makes me laugh. You fill in the blank with how you feel when you hear Central Time. Those are powerful feelings. And you make a powerful statement when you support what you value and what you believe in. So give now on this last day of the spring membership drive at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
The clock is ticking. Our spring membership drive ends at 7 o'clock today. That still leaves you with time, but not a lot of time, to cast your vote in favor of Wisconsin Public Radio. Take just a few minutes to make your gift right now.
And thank you if you've already contributed, and a very special thank you to our loyal, sustaining members. If you haven't given yet, take the opportunity right now. It really does take just a couple minutes of your time. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Looking for 13 more gifts by the end of this hour. In the next 20 minutes, we can do it with your help. As an added bonus, get entered into a drawing for a $500 grocery store gift card. You'll have five chances to win that. You can enter automatically when you give at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. By the way, if you're already a sustainer, great news. You get entered into these drawings automatically.
And when you go to WPR.org to make your gift, you can also check out the new 2019 WPR t-shirt. You can pick that up with a gift of $120 or set up a sustaining membership for $10 a month. Do that right now, this last day of the drive. You don't want to miss out. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
We can't do it without you. Make your very important gift right now. WPR.org or call 888-202-2552, and thank you. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. According to the Racine Journal-Times, about $225 million had been spent through January on road projects around the Foxconn development in Racine County. The paper says there's still about $325 million to go toward local roads and I-94. According to plans, the area will be home to what's known as a Generation 6 facility. That's industry speak for where LCD screens for phones, tablets, and small TVs are made. Originally, it was supposed to be a Generation 10.5, which refers to an even bigger plant that produces screens for large LCD TVs. Now, some analysts are speculating that what winds up being built in Mount Pleasant will be even smaller. Willie Shee is the Robert and Jane Sizek Professor of Management Practice and Business Administration at Harvard University. He talked earlier today with Central Time executive producer Judith Sears-Poisson.
Can you give us a little more detail about the difference between a Generation 10.5 and a Generation 6 facility? How big a downsize is that?
Well, when you're making these LCDs, usually what people refer to is the mother glass size, and that's what Generation 10.5 versus Generation 6 is. Generation 10.5 is the largest factory that you will find of that type. And typically that the size of that glass is such that you can cut, I think it's like 6 75-inch TVs from one piece. So that piece of glass is probably about the size of a parking space, maybe, you know, a little smaller than a one-car garage. Now, a Gen 6 piece of glass is considerably smaller. It's more like the size of maybe a queen-size bed or so. So it's considerably smaller. In both cases, the sheets of glass are very thin, so they're typically 7/10 of a millimeter thick. So you can imagine like a Gen 10.5 sheet of glass that's the size of, you know, a parking space or a one-car garage, and you try to handle that, and it's really quite challenging. So the smaller size glasses are actually much easier to manufacture with.
So were you surprised at all when the company announced that it was scaling its plans back?
Well, actually, no, I was not surprised at all. You know, the first thing is because when you build a Gen 10.5 fab, as they call them, these factories are called fabs, you have to have that glass come in from a supplier. And Gen 10.5 glass, as you can imagine, is so big and so fragile, every other 10.5 fab in the world has a glass factory across the street. Okay, and usually what they'll do is they'll feed it via underground tunnels into, you know, the actual LCD factory. You can't ship them. They're so big and they're so fragile. So, you know, once I understood that Wisconsin was not going to provide a subsidy for the construction of the glass factory, you know, I figured it was only a matter of time until, you know, that fab got scaled down. Because, you know, Gen 6 glass, you could ship it from a distance. It's not ideal, but you could ship it. But 10.5 is really not practical.
I think I'm remembering from your article that the closest glass factory, the closest Corning factory that would be making this type of glass is actually in Kentucky. And so you're saying that it's impossible to ship something so sensitive from Kentucky. Usually it's right across the street, as you said.
Well, yeah, Kentucky is not exactly across the street. You could ship Gen 6 glass. I mean, I imagine you could, you know, it might take some superhuman efforts to ship Gen 10.5 glass. You know, normally what you have to do is you have to pack it in crates, and it's very fragile and so on. So, you know, 10.5 is really impractical to ship great distances, but Gen 6 you could.
So you have spent quite a bit of time in China looking at the factories that they have there, the fabs, as you call them, and the glass factories. Give us a sense of the scale of these facilities and whether that would ever have been possible in Wisconsin.
Well, it's possible. If you walk into one of these LCD fabs, I visited a Gen 10.5 fab last year. It was a brand new one in Hefei, China, which is, you know, an inland city. And the building for this fab was 1.3 kilometers from end to end, okay? And usually these fabs are, they're gigantic. And one of the reasons is they have to be an ultra-clean environment. You can imagine if you're trying to make these screens, if you have dust particles get in the way, you know, you'll have, like, these dark spots on the screen, right? Dead pixels that are referred to. You know, so they have to be ultra-clean environments. And in order to do that, what they usually do is they'll build the fab to be typically about maybe 9 stories high, okay? And they really have 3 levels. The first level is for equipment on the ground floor. You'll have, you know, electrical distribution equipment and chemicals and things like that. The central floor will be a very, very large clean room. In the case of this Gen 10.5, I went to, I think it was about 440,000 square meters, which is an enormous clean room. It was probably the largest clean room of that caliber that I've ever seen. And then on the floor above it, you'll have all this air handling equipment because you need to push purified air down through the fab and then down into the lower floor. So these things are enormous structures. They take a lot of steel to build, and you know, then inside the fab, since it's ultra clean, you'll have a very high level of automation. You'll have these robotic glass handlers that move the glass, and then you'll have these very large manufacturing tools, which, you know, will put a sheet of glass into an oven, for example, and you'll deposit silicon on them, and you'll deposit all these patterns on them in order to make a sandwich. Because when you ultimately make those LCD panels, whether you're going to use it for a TV screen or, you know, a phone or whatever, they're actually a sandwich, right? So you have to make one side of the sandwich, you'll pattern transistor cells, and the other side you'll pattern these red, green, and blue dots that you use to make up the colors, and then you have to smack those two sides together and align them to, you know, a couple of fractions of a micron, right? So you have to align them with tremendous precision. And all this stuff, human hands can't do that anymore, so you have to have highly specialized manufacturing tools. So inside a fab like that, you'll have these monstrous tools that handle everything, robots that move the glass around. You won't see a lot of people on the floor, right? The people will be engineers who set up the tools, and then we'll be operating on them from a control room off to the side somewhere.
We're talking with Willie Shi right now. He is a professor of management practice and business administration at Harvard University. We're talking about a recent piece that he wrote for wiscontext.org about Foxconn and the differences in doing business in China and Wisconsin and the U.S. And Willie, so it's pretty clear we're not going to have a 10.5 factory here. How confident are you that we will actually get the Generation 6 factory in Mount Pleasant?
Well, that one is possible, okay? It's possible, but Foxconn will face a number of obstacles, okay? First of all, not only the glass, but all the other materials that you use for making LCD panels, whether it's for TV sets or smartphones or whatever, all those other materials have to come from Asia as well, right? So you could say, well, I'm going to build a Gen 6 fab here. I'll import all those materials. But when you are done with the output, you'll have these panels. That's what they call these kind of semi-finished LCD screens, panels which I might use in TVs or use in phones or tablets or whatever. Those panels will then have to go into a product like a TV set or a phone. But the comparison products will come from Asia, will be finished panels, okay, and they will be at a market price, right? So this fab, if Foxconn builds it in Wisconsin, they have to have it at a competitive world market price, right? These panels are kind of a commodity. I hate to say it, right, but they're a commodity, a very high-tech commodity, but the pricing is governed by what other suppliers around the world are willing to sell them for. Okay, and we're at a point in the cycle where in China, manufacturers have added a huge amount of capacity, right? So there's really surplus capacity in the market right now, and the pricing isn't very good, right? So you end up with a commodity. So if Foxconn builds this factory and they're selling into a market that has kind of this commoditization pressure, the question will be how much money can they really make, okay? And I've kind of held the position of, well, you don't want to build a fab kind of in the wrong part of the cycle where all you're going to do is add to the glut in the marketplace. You know, that's not good for Foxconn, and it won't be good for Wisconsin if they do that. Okay, so the core question is, how competitive will that factory be when they're done? Okay, now, I think that, you know, there's been a level of expectation set about, well, we're going to have an LCD fab, okay? Well, maybe it won't be a Gen 10.5 fab. Maybe it'll be a Gen 6 or Gen 6.5 fab, but we want to have an LCD fab. I don't know if that's necessarily the best approach, right? I mean, because if you think about it, the state of Wisconsin gave Foxconn incentives to really create economic activity, create jobs, you know, and new economic growth there. Okay, now, people have gotten locked into this idea of, you know, you promised a fab, I want to have a fab. Okay, and now Foxconn is trying to kind of figure out how are we going to do this, right? And, you know, if it were a choice of a Gen 6 or 6.5 fab versus something else that might be more economically successful, which would you rather have? I know what I would recommend, but I think that's the core question facing all the stakeholders in this at this point.
Governor Evers' administration, which of course was not the administration that negotiated the contract, that was the previous administration under Scott Walker. The current administration says that they're comfortable with Foxconn's plans for Wisconsin and believe that they're proceeding as they should. And they have also said that they think Foxconn executives are comfortable with their team. How much more complicated is this project, though, with a new administration from a different political party stepping in midstream?
Well, it's always complicated when you have expectations, right? I mean, I think there's a level of expectation set around incentives and what kind of jobs and economic activity will Foxconn create, right? The question going forward in my mind is how much flexibility will be shown on both sides? Right, in terms of, well, if that's the objective, do we have to do it with a Gen 6 or Gen 6.5 fab, right? I mean, that's always already a step back from the original promise. Now the question, I think, with a change of administration is how much flexibility is there on both sides? Can both sides come up with something that makes sense and is sustainable economically? Right. You don't want Foxconn to build a factory that loses money, right? Because that doesn't serve anybody well over the long term, right? You actually want Foxconn to do something there that's, you know, going to have a long life and create long-lasting jobs and create that economic activity. So I don't know, right? But the question is, how much flexibility will they show?
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Willie Shee is a professor of management at Harvard Business School. He talked with Judith Sears-Poisson about why he says it's unlikely that Foxconn will build a manufacturing campus as big as originally planned and what the company might ultimately put up instead. Coming up, think about a particular food that you just don't like. We'll talk about the science of food aversion and how we can get over it if we want to. Now, Judith Sears-Poisson is in the studio with me for our spring membership drive here at WPR. Your contribution keeps Central Time and all these great conversations going. Donate now on this, the last day of the drive, at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when six more people join in during the next 5 minutes, we'll meet our goal. You could be one of those. These hourly goals are set up to make sure we have the funding for the programs you enjoy, programs like Central Time. So make your donation now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We just had a conversation there about this big deal in Wisconsin, a lot of state money potentially going into this, a potentially economy-changing project, Foxconn in southeastern Wisconsin, with an expert in the field looking at what may and may not happen in the weeks and months to come. These are the kind of conversations you can count on Central Time, conversations that keep advancing ongoing news stories like the Foxconn plant here in the state.
WPR is listener supported. That means that your donation at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 makes the many topics you tune in for every day possible. So choose an amount that works for you and then make your gift.
This membership drive, we have an exciting drawing for a $500 grocery gift card. You'll have five chances to win. No contribution is necessary. You can see the rules at WPR.org, or you can just enter automatically when you make a donation of any amount right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. You got a second? I just want to talk, I want to talk about our relationship. We've been spending a lot of time together, and I can't imagine my life without you. I get the feeling it's mutual. When you become a sustaining member and give every month, you help this station bring us more quality time. And I think that's what we both want. Here's how to make things official.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your donation. We heard from Heidi and Paul from Oak Creek. They say, we love Central Time. Thanks for making a great program. Heidi and Paul, thank you so much for listening. thank you so much for giving. How about you? Make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org, 888-202-2552. This is the last day of our spring membership drive. Time for you to show your appreciation for the programs that you count on and show your support. Do it right now, WPR.org.
Rob Ferret here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support on the last day of our spring membership drive. Looking for four more pledges by the end of the hour, which is nigh. It is coming up. You can keep pledging through the news, though. We'll count it toward hitting our goal this hour. Get on the line right now or get online right now. You can do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Maybe you've been listening to WPR without giving because you didn't know that we're listener supported. Well, we are. The largest source of funding for WPR programs comes from listeners.
And maybe you wanted to listen for a while to see if you liked what you heard. Well, you're still listening, so now's the perfect time to support the programming you rely on. Your gift of 10 or 20 bucks a month, whatever amount you choose, makes a big difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now is the time to join your friends and neighbors who believe in the value of WPR and believe in supporting it. It takes the support of more than 50,000 members in Wisconsin to make WPR as good as it can be.
We heard from Angela in Milwaukee, who also wants that. Angela says, public radio is such an important asset to our communities. I want my children to always have access to factual reporting. For that reason, I am donating today. Thank you so much, Angela. Your gift is going to help keep WPR here for your kids and for future generations. Join Angela now with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Just one more pledge gets us there, Judith.
One more pledge. And remember, if you pledge $10 a month, $120, you can get the lovely 2019 WPR t-shirt. USA made, printed here in Wisconsin. Show your support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thanks.